Core breach is imminent.
All hands abandon ship! Repeat! All hands abandon...
All right, guys, welcome to another microbrew episode of the Three Drinks In podcast. We're talking today about episode 10. It was 10 of Star Trek Discovery. So I want to remind you before we get into all of this that we are available for download on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radios. Just search for Three Drinks In podcast. Leave a review, tell your friends about us, leave us a rating. We really appreciate all those things. Hit that subscribe button so you never have to miss an episode. And if you want to follow us on Twitter, we are at 3DrinksInPod, at the number 3DrinksInPod, 3DrinksInPodcast on Instagram and Facebook, and you can email us at 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail.com. So, episode 10. Did it have a title? I didn't catch the title.
Despite Yourself? Is that what it was called?
I don't know. They have
really odd titles.
It seems like they want you to think they put a lot of thought into it. I don't know if they actually have, but they're trying really hard on many levels of this show. And one of them being the titles of the episodes. Mm-hmm. So is it because... I mean, I remember on the old episodes of Star Trek, the title of the episode would appear following the credits.
Like it would appear right after the like the intro song and everything like that.
Yeah,
and in the corner,
which you don't see on TV now. Like they don't, but I guess because everyone is streaming this now. You know that. I guess they're making an effort to point out that they bothered to think of titles for these things.
Yeah, a few shows do that anymore. And most shows didn't do it except just to be clever for themselves. I mean, yeah. The Simpsons always had a clever little pun, but then they always had gags like with Seinfeld and Friends. It was always like Seinfeld was always just the pen, the cookie, the this, the that. Friends was like, you know, the one with them getting into trouble, the one with the naked neighbor, things like that.
Yeah, that was clever for a while, but then it got, I don't know. Everything about Friends bothers me the more I think about Friends, even though it was a genius show and really, really funny and was funny for a long, long time. But, yeah, I don't know. So I don't remember a lot of what happens in this episode.
Well, that's helpful.
And I watched it only like 2 days ago. It was a bit of a mess.
Yeah, as all of these episodes are.
Yeah, and then they're not getting any better at making anything clearer. Unless they're shoving the clarity in your face to say, "Are you paying attention, everybody? This is what we're doing." So the gist of it was that they're now in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, they're in the Mirror Universe. Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah. Now, I listened to that the guys at Red Letter Media talk about this show in like a mid-season recap before this episode aired. And one of the things they said at the end of it was, given how weird the show is and how it's not like anything else in terms of like the characters, they're all kind of mean to each other and they're sort of jerky and... you know, the Captain Lorca is clearly evil and, you know, is like a secret bad guy, they called him. That wouldn't it be a lark if this was actually set in the Mirror Universe to start with and they get pulled in through all these jumps into the good universe, our universe?
Yeah.
And wouldn't that be a fun little twist for the fans and explain a lot of things? And I couldn't help but sit in my car and chuckle to myself as I listened to that. I went, oh, boy, you're right. That would have been a good idea.
Yeah, that would have been a good idea. That's not what they did.
No, they didn't. So basically, they find themselves in the Mirror Universe and they get a giant box of exposition from the wreckage of a bunch of Klingon ships or, you know, whatever. And they learn everything about the evil empire. And for those of you who don't know, and I can't imagine who you'd be listening to this right now if you didn't know, but in the Mirror Universe, the humans are all xenophobic monsters, and they're just, they call themselves Terrans and not humans, and they have a vast galactic empire where they brutally conduct their affairs. It's just everyone's a jerk and a murderous jerk, and, you know, it's just the worst parts of humanity are overemphasized. And the aliens, like Spock and them, they're all fighting a resistance against the evil Terran Empire.
Yeah, that's how I knew immediately where we were. Immediately. And I'm not exactly proud of that, because I can't remember my wife's birthday. But I do know that, like, they're like, oh, these ships are all blown up. That's so strange. Where are we? I can't tell. And a Vulcan ship starts to fire on them. And when a ship comes to rescue them, the rescue ship is like, oh, letting those rebels get a drop on you, huh? I was like, oh, we're in the Mirror Universe. Okay. Because I knew Vulcans in this Mirror Universe are rebels to the Empire. So I was like, oh, all right. Well, that's disappointing. That's when I texted you the picture of Dr. Cox banging his head on the countertop repeatedly. That's how I felt when I was like, oh, God, we're really doing this, aren't we? All right.
Yeah.
Here we are.
I think the Mirror Universe provided for these jackasses who write this show an opportunity to turn things up to 11 as if they weren't already there, and to say, like, oh, so there's a whole storyline within previously developed canon that, you know, features our characters killing one another and stabbing one another and basically behaving badly. And there's some lesbianism in there. Great. Let's get some of that going. Mm-hmm. And, like, there's no reason for them to be in the Mirror Universe.
Go ahead.
You know, like, one of the things I appreciated so much, and I keep coming back to DS9. But, like, the initial, way that they established the Mirror Universe was through the transporters. There was a transporter malfunction, and Kirk and who, I didn't really watch the old series, but, Kirk and them get sucked into this universe where Spock has a goatee and everyone's evil and it's totally different. And DS9, was very consistent with that. They used the transports to get people back and forth. And I didn't always love those episodes. In fact, I really didn't like a lot of them. They were kind of played for yucks in a bit. And, they gave actors license to be a little bit, over the top and different. And that was fine. Then it got weird where, like, Worf was an idiot in the Mirror Universe. And, the Nana Visser got to play some kind of weird sexpot tyrant, and the whole thing was bizarre. But they were consistent in how things went. And then in Enterprise, they did this funny thing where it turns out that in the Tholian Web episode, when the USS Defiant Constitution class disappears, they go into the Mirror Universe, and it's kind of an interesting thing. But basically, that opened the door for the folks at Discovery to, let's just send them there. Why not? They did it before on Enterprise, and so yeah, it just, everything seems cheap, and they just wanted to get them into an opportunity where it could be even more violent and disturbing than it already was.
Yeah, well, that was my problem, was that, aside from mining more of nostalgia purposes, what has always been the point of going to this one parallel dimension in which everyone is an asshole? Because on the original show, which was a campy 60s space show, the idea was, what would it be like if you met your evil version? And we end up rubbing off a little bit on them. Our Spock convinces evil goatee Spock maybe you shouldn't be so hard on people, and there's room for empathy. And the joke continues 40 years later or whatever with Deep Space Nine, in which that compassion has led to everyone being enslaved. Okay. Everybody in that universe is still an asshole, and the compassion didn't rub off at all, and all it's done is make it worse. Okay. So like every time you went over there, it was just an excuse to have your characters look at each other and go, this is what I would be like if I was a total jerk. And that gets played out. What's the point of going over there? We know what you'd be like if you were a jerk. We wouldn't want to be around you. So I don't want to be around you now.
Yeah. I mean, it's usually like the interesting ones in DS9 were featured dead characters. Characters who were dead in our universe, but were alive in the mirror universe. Barile, who was a priest, for Christ's sake, and then here, in the mirror universe, he's evil, and like that's a big juxtaposition right there. But he has an agenda. Sisko's dead wife is alive, and she needs, but there was something that the people in the bad universe wanted from the good that they didn't have, like the cloaking technology, or so. There was always something there that precipitated the whole thing. But yeah, after a while, it just becomes, let's do something different because we don't have any more ideas, and it's very easy to do an opposite day episode.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure what the point of going to that now is either. But then that's kind of been the whole point of the show, and that I'm not sure what's going on. How long are we going to be in this? Are we going to lose people here? Are they going to come back with us? I mean, what's the point? And also, the juxtaposition is not so extreme. Picard and Sisko, they were walking monks, practically. They were so good. And then we go into the mirror universe, and, oh, that's bad. But Michael Burnham is not a great character, not a great person. Lorca, as we said, he's pretty much on the border of being a psychopath. So what's the point of going and meeting their less or more nasty versions of them?
Yeah,
I understand.
I mean, that's kind of what was funny about what the guy said at Red Letter Media was like, they're already evil.
Yeah, they're not great people to start with.
What would their foil be? Like, is Lorca is he a nice guy in the mirror universe? But no, he's supposed to be, just as much of a jerk or just more so in this one. So I guess it's not so much opposite. It's just a continuum of assholedom. And on one end is like Picard, and on the far end of it is, evil Lorca, and somewhere in the middle is actual Lorca, and like that's your spectrum of jerk.
And I guess they're going to stay there a while because they instantaneously blend in very quickly. They paint the hole, for Christ's sakes.
that's one of my notes, was like, we have to make everything look, and I'm like, do you?
Yeah, everything has to look like we belong. All right, well, get that bucket and some brushes and go outside and paint a new thing on the hull.
that was one of the things I wrote down, was like, before we continue to dump on it, I do want to point out that it was kind of clever when they had, can't think of the actor's name who plays Captain Lorca. Do you know his name? Christ. He's very famous.
I was thinking of the girl who plays Ensign Tilly.
You mean Ensign Killy?
No, Captain Killy.
Oh my God! Even they were like, "That's a bit much, isn't it?"
Well, that's not even very clever.
But they there was a little bit on the over the comm where they're talking to the other ship, and they have him speak for some reason, and they go, "We don't know who you are, so just disguise your voice." And he drops his fake American accent and uses his really thick Scottish one.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, that's a cute little nod to the fact that you're not actually an American. Although I have to say, his accent is great.
Oh, he's good. He's a very good actor.
Yeah, I mean, that's not an easy sell to do an American accent if you're not an American. And if I had known that he was Scottish, I totally would have bought it. But Googling his name, that's just going to drive me absolutely crazy. And his name is Jason Isaacs. Thank you.
Right.
Right. So, yeah. So they paint the hull. They change all the graphics on the interface. They get new uniforms. They dye that girl's hair blonde. And her mom would like it for some reason. That would be a, she'd be a big fan of the, you know.
So I don't know what it is that they're doing. They're jumping onto a different ship.
They are, so the basic gist, this is all kind of coming back to me now. I really had no idea what the episode was about when we started talking. They are in, you know, they're in the bad place, and they're on their discovery, and they meet the Shinzo, or the Shinzon, or whatever the heck their, her old ship was that was right. destroyed at the Battle of the Binary Stars, which is a fucking mouthful. And they need to get to the Defiant, which was pulled in, at, so this is where I'm lost.
Oh, is that where they're going?
They're going to the Defiant so they could get the information from the Defiant as to how the Defiant was sent there, because Stamets is unavailable because he's in a semi-fugue state and he can't do the jumps anymore. So they can't jump their way back to the universe. They have to go find the Defiant. But here's the thing. Didn't this take place before that?
No, this is after that.
No, I thought this entire show takes place 10 years prior to the adventures of Kirk and Spock and Bones.
Right.
And that's when we see the Defiant disappear in the Tholian Web episode.
Yes, but when it goes to the Mirror Universe, it also goes back in time. That's how it ends up in Archer's time period.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, I thought it got there because of like an anomaly or something. I don't know. I didn't watch Star Trek 40 years ago, so I don't really remember. But, all right. Well, I hope they didn't dismantle that ship. And I hope it's still there.
So let's play this out then. let's nerd this one out for a minute. If that ship gets sent into the Mirror Universe and back in time in the episode Tholian Web, and it appears in Archer's time such that it's available for him to hijack from the Tholians and then wage war against the rebels and build up the Terran Empire and make himself, or actually it's the what's her name? Ensign Sato becomes the Empress.
Yeah,
because she kills Archer. That was several decades before these people come along.
Yes.
Did they say that the Defiant was nearby and we're going to go just swing over and get it? I forget that bit.
I don't know. That all happened in this exposition dump that happened so fast. And I was like, where are we going? Where are we going now? Why do we have to get on this old ship? Is it the nearest one? Like,
I guess
it got so much confusing. I was like, I don't know where we are.
I think what they're really trying to do is just get information from the computer on that. I think that's what it is. Because otherwise,
I mean, that's okay.
All my questions are pretty. They're lazy about this, but they're not that lazy.
Yeah.
So I think that they just have to get to. That's why she asked the guy, take me to the ready room before he tries to kill her in the fucking elevator.
Yeah. And then she sees him at the end and he's like, well, did you get the info? And she's like, oh, I haven't had time. I've been running around the ship and people won't leave me alone. And I'm like, okay.
But you're the captain now, right? You just killed that guy. You can't tell him to get the fuck off of me?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not getting any better.
But then she hung out with Lieutenant. What were they called? Lieutenant Love Interest.
Who, by the way, can we now safely say that this very plausible fan theory, with lots of evidence based, you know, from, you know, IMDb and the internet, is confirmed?
Yeah, seemed about right to me.
Yeah. So Captain or Lieutenant Handsome is really Voke.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
but he's not quite right.
Right, because basically he's a sleeper agent, is what he is.
Yeah,
and she tried to activate him in the jail cell, and it didn't work because he loves Michael Burnham so much that he's conflicted, and he kills the other doctor.
Yeah, it kills the other doctor.
Which no one seems to notice. Like, that happens with a good 10 minutes left in the episode, and no one's like, hey, by the way, dead guy on the floor.
Yeah, well, someone said he has, like plotitis, which is where, you know, he only has a problem when it's convenient. Like, he's missing, and he's lost, and, you know, you're late, and no one knows where he is, and he goes, I don't know where I was. There's no excuse. And they all just sort of shrug, like, it's okay to be late for your duty shifts, even though you were busy killing somebody. Like, I thought sick bay was busy, that there were people in it.
I mean, the rest of the ship hums along, and that's one of the things that we kind of like about the show, is that it's a very busy set. The audio, like the soundtrack to the show is busy. Like, there's PA announcements all the time, and
yeah. You
know, bingo was canceled and this kind of stuff, and someone lost a set of keys. But then there's nobody in the medical bay ever, and there's no other doctors. Even though they're mentioned, I'm giving this guy to a different doctor. What other doctor? Who else is there?
Yeah. And I know there were some complaints that they had the two gay characters for the first time, and they killed one. And, you know, it's always the black people and the gay people. They're always the first to go. And I'm sitting here going, I'm more upset that they took a character that had about 14 lines previously, and all I knew about him was that he was gay, and they killed him, and I was supposed to be upset about it. I'm not. Not upset that he died. I didn't really care.
Well, I don't know. I'm not upset about it, but they did establish the relationship between those two characters, and that guy's going to wake up at some point and find out that his husband is dead, and that'll be upsetting. I mean, what are they going to do? Are they going to just swap him out with, like, Mirror Universe gay doctor?
Oh, that's exactly what they're going to do. Because I read in interviews where they said, oh, he'll probably come back. And I was like, well, then we have no point in being there, do we?
I mean, they were just on a cover of a magazine together.
Yeah.
Those two actors. I mean, they're very outspoken members of the LGBT community within Hollywood and in the New York theater scene. They, you know, like, their faces are plastered all over every, you know, The Advocate and whatever else. I can't think of the name of the magazine I saw them on. But and they're going to kill him off in the middle of the first season? I don't think so.
Yeah, he'll be back. You know, the killing anybody trope is, it's played a little bit.
He's only mostly dead.
Which I said at the time when being able to just kill off any random person is not helpful. You know, deaths should be meaningful, but whatever. Remember when they killed the other lieutenant because she let the monster out of its cage and just randomly started shooting at it? So
she killed by her own hubris in that scene of what happened.
Right. Like, it was more believable and sad when the first captain of the show was killed by the Klingons. What was it? Georgia was the woman's name, character. Yeah. Yeah, okay, she meant something to somebody, and we'd seen her for two episodes. She was intelligent. It was a sad way to go. I knew she wasn't going to make it because she was the special guest star, and we knew that Jason Isaacs was the captain, but it meant something to the character versus, like, let's kill this lieutenant who acts like a moron just because we need to get a shocking death in there. And I was just like, what? That was stupid.
Yeah, no, they and yeah, it's just more laziness. Like, they don't seem to care about what they're doing here. They don't care about it in terms of what the other people think of it. They don't care about they're just throwing it up there, and it's
I don't know what they're doing. Are we chucking that whole Klingon War storyline now? Are we ever going to go back to it? What is it I'm supposed to be focused on? Because the human only has a finite amount of empathy and curiosity about these things. You can't have 14 different storylines at once.
No, it's very haphazardly constructed.
You know, and it's different than, like, well, we have a lot of supporting characters like Deep Space Nine did. Yes, but they all existed within a story framework that I could get behind. You know, they were all affected at the same time by similar events. They just acted in different ways. Well, that's different than being like, we're all on this mission. Nope, we're all on that mission. Nope, oh, let's go this way. Oh, parallel universe.
Yeah. And here's the thing I want to know. Did Lorca do that deliberately?
Like, I thought he did.
Because there's levels of deliberateness here. He talks to Stamets about, before that he makes the final jump, says, you know, look at all this data I've collected. It's showing me that there's a lot more to, you know, existence than just our universe. And they kind of get excited about the scientific aspect of what they're doing. And isn't this cool? And then, you know, he sabotages the last jump that Stamets makes, obviously. But does he do it and throw them into this horrifyingly dangerous scenario where he himself is going to get, you know, put into like a torture chamber for the better part of whatever? You know, or did he just, you know, attempt to disrupt what he was doing to keep Stamets from, I don't know, going? His motivation so unclear. What about this was deliberate? Was it just, was he trying to kill Stamets and just, well, I'll find me another guy and I'll just stick these plugs into him and then we'll make him the guy we do this to? What exactly is anybody doing?
Yeah, no, I think it's supposed to be deliberate that you're not sure. Like, you know, he changed something, but did he intend to go this far? Probably not. That's my guess.
He wouldn't know where
he's the most inconsistently written person because the decisions come from him. He's creating conflict and drama, which is what needs to happen. Okay, like he says in this episode, I don't want you treating the doctor. I don't want you treating this guy because it's complicated. You're in love with him. You're a couple. We're following the rule book on this. Sometimes he follows the rule book and sometimes he doesn't. And then, like, doctor even says, like, oh, now we're going to follow the rule book.
Yeah.
You know, and he has a point because it's poor writing in that he needs to come up with roadblocks because he's the captain. You can do this, you can't do that. Well, that makes for a very odd, consistent character.
I mean,
also, I don't know the rules on this, so maybe someone in the military could write in and tell us, can you still serve in a ship or in a unit with someone that you're in love with or married to? I don't see how that's beneficial to anyone, anywhere, ever.
Well, Star Trek always made, you know, was pretty vague about this kind of thing because they need to get people together to create character conflicts and to do things like that. So, yeah, they kind of bend the rules a little bit. They did it, you know, with Dax and Worf getting married.
Yeah, and then they had a whole episode about, like, we're not sending you together anymore because we put the two of you on a mission and you chose your wife over the mission.
Right.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's what we call dealing with that effectively.
Yeah.
But like,
ah.
I mean, the thing about, you can have a story about, you know, because the story is not about anybody but Michael. That's what the show is focused on. Every episode, really? Too, is about her and how she deals with what's going on. You can tell stories about a military situation where you're focusing on an underling, on a lower level, a lower rank character. They can be very compelling stories. You can tell that one time, though. You can't make a show about a tight-knit group of people taking orders from one person when that one person they take orders from is irrational and crazy, and yet you're focusing not on that person, but on the person who's reacting to that person. You know, even though not every episode of the other Star Trek shows was about the captain of the ship or the space station, you know, the captain's behavior was very consistent in that everyone else knew what they were supposed to do, and they had to make decisions whether or not to go along with it. So without that lodestar for the rest of the characters to adhere to, you can't focus on them for any length of time because they're just reacting to what's going on around them. You know, I'm trying to think of a good example of this, but like, you know, anytime, you know, there was an like a of a a Lieutenant Paris episode on Voyager, or an episode about Jake and Nog on DS9. Part of their decision-making process as they went through their story was, what would the captain do? It was always, you know, they're faced with a situation and they have to figure out what to do and how to react. And their moral compass was this one character. And if that one character is insane and murderous, then no one's going to know what to do. And it's going to muddle everything. And you're not going to be able to follow anything consistently, because there's just, it's chaos.
Well, it's also chaos in the practical orders too. What am I supposed to be doing?
Right.
And the guy captain even said, do this. All right. Well, last time he said we should do that. And then they have no direction. So we just watch them sort of like try to figure out what to do from episode to episode.
Yeah. And it happens constantly. It happens in this last one when the doctor says, well, now we're following. I faked all these medical records. You had me do all these legal things. And then when the admiral gets kidnapped and number one weirdo alien guy is like, shouldn't we go get her? And he's like, oh no, we'll let Starfleet worry about it. He's like, Captain, this is inconsistent with everything you've ever done before. Like, they constantly bring it up. So, and even like behind the captain's back, they all think he's nuts.
Yeah.
So like, it makes what's already kind of a weird and awkward and violent and uncomfortable show more uncomfortable. Because I can never like relax when I watch this show. And I think what was interesting in listening to the guys at Red Letter Media talk about this in the Orville was that with this show, I can't relax. I can't, like, I have nothing to latch on to. It's all unfamiliar. It's like trying to climb obsidian. It just doesn't, there's no footholds. With the Orville, there's too much of that. It's too comfortable. It's too familiar. It's recycled plot lines from, and that's why I sort of inadvertently didn't continue watching the Orville, was because I didn't get much out of it. It was just, okay, this is nice and familiar. It looks like Star Trek. And
yeah, and I like it, but and even when I was watching the Orville, like, I could spot the twists a mile away because I'd seen it before. I was like, yeah, I know where this is going. So there's no, I'm watching it, but I'm not like super engaged, unless they make a joke, in which case I kind of chuckle. But like the plot and the emotions of that show, I'm just like, yeah, no, I know.
Like,
I get you, buddy.
I can't engage with any of this. On the one hand, because I know already, it's just doing it again. And on the other hand, I can't engage with this show because there's no one to identify with. And maybe it's because I'm a cis white male that I can't identify with, you know, with Michael Burnham, and that people really believe that you're supposed to identify with her. Okay, I have nothing, that I should just stop watching the show right now if that's the response that I'm going to get from somebody who's just like, who's going to tell me that I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, she's a hard character. It's also why, like, they did that Lower Decks episode of The Next Generation, and it was always about, like, the people below, a captain and the commander and the lieutenant. It's like they're underlings and everything.
I love that episode. That's a great episode.
Can you do an entire series about those people?
No.
They're not in the thick of any action. They're just, it's like watching, you know, it's like following the life of a flight attendant, you know. Would you rather follow the captain or the commander of a ship instead of the person serving peanuts?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have Michael Burnham, who's even more disconnected because she doesn't even want to be there. She doesn't want to do anything. Well, how am I supposed to relate to a character who'd rather sleep in her pajamas all day and feel bad about herself?
Yeah. No, that's what I meant before. Like you're just watching someone react. They have no control.
Yeah.
And she's
not supposed to have any emotions. She's a, you know, she always suppresses her emotions. Well, that's even better. I can really relate to that.
Yeah. I mean, and she does that so irregularly that's just like, oh, by the way, now I'm part Vulcan, but not really. I just lived there for a while.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care like how long you live somewhere. I could move to China. I'm never going to be Chinese. That's just not going to happen. So I have a hard time believing that she grew up on Vulcan and she's a different species practically.
Yeah.
Ugh, crying out loud.
Well, I don't know how long they'll be in this mirror universe or what they're going to do there, but what? Okay.
But
I thought it was interesting that, well, they said that, like, I think we've switched places with the other Discovery. And I'd love to follow that ship around. Now, that could make for some interesting times.
Huh.
Yeah, which is what happened in the original one with, you know, Kirk. It wasn't just that they went over there, but that they switched.
That is more interesting.
Well, it would just be interesting to see how violent savages deal with good people, but in a war.
Yeah.
Huh. Switch it up for a day.
Maybe. We'll see. All right.
I think there's only five more episodes. There's not as many this second half of the show, of the season.
Right, so. Yeah. It's a pretty short season. But they got renewed. They got picked up for the second season. So.
Yeah, and I read that the original plan before they dumped the guy who came up with it was to do a different season with a different group of people, which would have been so great. That's really what I wanted to see.
Yeah, I like the anthology.
But now they're not doing that. So, you know, it's going to be this crew again, and at least the ones that survive anyway.
Hmm. Before we go, I do want to mention to everyone that if you're looking for a kind of bizarre and somewhat fucked up version of Star Trek, you should check out the first episode of the fourth season of Black Mirror on Netflix, which is like a Twilight Zone anthology show, which was funny. Like, I didn't realize that, like, it's not just an anthology show. It's different every episode. They do... It's like an old-style TV show where they do a different thing every week.
Yeah, it's supposed to be like the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, so. No, it was a fantastic episode. I really, really enjoyed it. And it was Kristen Milioti, and Discount Matt Damon, whose name I can never remember, and a guy named Jimmy Simpson, who I saw him on Broadway a few years ago, and he was the guy who played Beercules on How I Met Your Mother in that one episode. The Sport of Kings. But he's in it. He's great. So you check that out. That was worth watching, and that was sort of this ilk. Anything else you want to add before we sign off here?
Nope.
All right. Well, I'll remind everyone one more time that we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Search for Three Drinks In. Leave us a rating or even a review. Hit that subscribe button. Twitter is at Three Drinks In Pod, Three Drinks In Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And you can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. And I guess we'll be back next week talking more Trek.
Yeah.
Or whatever the hell this is.
Keep bumping them out.
So.
Space action show.
Exactly. All right, everybody. As always, please drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time.
Yep. Take care.